This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Are you one of the more than 4 million North Carolinians who have not yet filled out your 2020 census form? There's still time. Though the process was originally scheduled to end by July 31st, it's been extended until September 30th because of the COVID-19 outbreak. With more than $7 billion in annual federal funding at stake, census reporting is especially important in North Carolina. At present, the state's census reporting numbers are lower than they were 10 years ago. Rural communities and those with high Black and Latinx populations are among those underreporting. With a looming deadline and restrictions the pandemic has placed on outreach efforts, the numbers may not be able to tick up fast enough to meet the deadline. Rebecca Tippett joins us now. Rebecca's founding director of Carolina Demography at the Carolina Population Center. Becky, welcome back.
Hi, Frank. Good to be with you.
Also with us, Alex Tasanovich, director of campaign finance and electoral reform at the liberal think tank Center for American Progress. Alex, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Rebecca, let me start with you. The census has been underway since April, and apparently 4 out of 10 North Carolinians still have not filled out their forms. Do we know what's going on?
So we've actually been doing the census since March. So, you know, we've been doing this for a while, and it started right before COVID-19. So what we're seeing, we expected before the pandemic hit to see slightly lower response rates because we know that people are just less likely to respond to surveys. Census advocates like myself were concerned about that because there was less funding this time around. And then the pandemic hit, and it has really complicated things.
How about North Carolina compared to other states, though?
So North Carolina has been steadily ranking about 34th through 36th of all U.S. states in D.C. So we are below average. We are multiple percentage points below the national average response. We are kind of middling performance to lower performance among the southeastern states. And we are definitely underperforming where we were in 2010. And we're underperforming worse than the nation is underperforming where it was. So we have room for improvement. And, you know, even though we're nearing the end, that means there's still almost 7 weeks that households can complete the census and try to get those numbers up.
Is the underreporting evenly spread, or are there some areas or regions that are different than others?
No, we're seeing a really high level of underreporting in predominantly rural communities, as well as some of our lower income urban communities. And what we're seeing is a very strong relationship between low internet access and lower response rates. But, you know, pockets of the Western Mountains, the Sand Hills are very underreported, as well as the Northeast and parts of the coast. So some of that's vacation homes. We know people can't respond when they don't live there, but a lot of these are communities that are at risk of undercount. We're looking at communities that have a higher proportion of young children at risk of undercount. And we're really concerned about making sure that those communities are fully counted and accurately represented in the next decade.
And ultimately, it's more than undercounting that's at stake here. I mean, I was looking at some of the figures, and according to the state census website, just a 3% undercount in North Carolina would ultimately cost our state more than $4 billion in funding. So who would feel that the most?
So when you're talking about census-derived funding, just at the federal level, there's over 300 programs that distribute over $1.5 trillion annually that sends about $44 billion to North Carolina. So we're talking about everything from Head Start and food stamps to determining kind of through less directly, but Pell Grants, Medicaid, all of this is tied to that in some way. Really critically right now, we can think about disaster response and planning. So FEMA and HUD use census-derived data to understand where they're responding, the communities that are going to be impacted, and how those outreach and engagement efforts need to be calibrated. And so as we're thinking about recovery from COVID-19, it's going to be vital to have a complete and accurate count.
Well, let's take a closer look at some of these items. Alex Tasanovich at the Center for American Progress. The census obviously used to determine many areas of funding in the state. Tell us, for instance, how it's used for federal medical assistance.
Well, that's right. Federal medical assistance is one of the many areas where funding for programs depends on having accurate census figures. So to take just one specific census funding formula, is called the FMAP, and that's a formula that determines funding for a range of different health programs. And one estimate by George Washington professor Andrew Reimer found that for every person not counted in the state of North Carolina, just for this set of five programs, the state loses about $1,000.
And that's five programs under the heading of medical. So, we're not talking about the entire loss here.
That's right. It's just a small fraction of the total.
And give us a sense of what that covers and who's covered under those programs.
Yeah, so FMAP covers five different programs. It includes Medicaid, the Children's Health Insurance Program, the Federal Foster Care Program, Adoption Assistance, and the Child Care and Development Fund. So it's a full range of programs that works towards benefiting the health and well-being of children and of families.
So as you just said, the every person undercounted would mean a loss of $1,000 just in federal medical assistance. Is there some overlap between people who are less likely to fill out the forms and those who may, need it the most?
Absolutely. But I think it's important to keep in mind, too, that a lot of these funding formulas are statewide. So individual people lose out when they're not counted in the census, their communities lose out, but so does the state as a whole, because the census funding also determines things like the amount of funding that the state receives for highway construction and the amount of funding the state receives for school lunches. So it really, there are some specific communities that will lose in terms of federal funding, but having low census numbers also hurts the state as a whole.
Rebecca Tippett, you made mention earlier of the recovery from the coronavirus and the pandemic. Obviously, that's going to require a great deal of federal aid. It already has, but as a vaccine is developed, it's going to mean even more. How might undercounting this year affect the state's ability to administer long-term coronavirus aid and relief?
So I think that there's a few ways in which we could see that impact. The first and foremost would be if a community is not completely counted, it's going to be hard for us to understand exactly what's going on there. So we the Bureau does its best to do a complete and accurate count, but we're not going to know completely the impact of the coronavirus pandemic and the disruption and the delay on kind of estimated undercounts until long after the census is actually complete. So there's kind of this knowing how many people live in a place and their characteristics, like their age and what might put them at risk of needing a vaccine, maybe depending on how we're rolling things out, as well as understanding exposure. So even the most basic data that we're using right now, which would be maybe case counts per 100,000 residents, rely on complete and accurate census data. But to Alex's point, the more important thing is that if we do not have a complete and accurate count in North Carolina and we have an undercount, we may not get our fair share of federal dollars allocated to aid and recovery.
Yeah, but it's interesting that you point out both of those, both of the strands in that. Not only is the total number related to the amount of money that you'll get, but the demographic information is vital to triage, to deciding how it's going to be once we have the aid, once we have medicine, where are the communities that are most likely affected, which you get from these demographic reports. So, Alex, not only that, it's not only money and demographics, but Alex Trsanovich, I should say Trsanovich, you also point out that areas of governance, we look at apportionment and redistricting and our district representation, all of those are tied to this. Tell us more about that.
That's right. So one of the important uses of census figures is that the population of each state is used after the census is complete to determine how many seats that state gets in the House of Representatives and Congress. So if your population is undercounted, there's a risk that your state will get fewer members of the House of Representatives and less of a voice in Congress. And in addition to that, the numbers are also used for the state's every 10-year redistricting process. And that's the process of drawing new districts for each member of the House of Representatives. Now, many people know that there's a phenomenon called gerrymandering, where politicians manipulate those district lines so that they're picking their voters rather than the voters choosing them. And that allows politicians to stay in power and to get more of their allies in power. And if you undercount certain communities, it makes it even easier for members of Congress to draw more skewed districts for themselves, and also state legislators to draw more skewed districts for themselves.
So, Rebecca, tell us what efforts the state typically makes to reach, first of all, the outreach effort in general, and then when they find there are pockets of underreporting, you know, what does the state do? How do the canvassers work on this? What's the plan?
So I think that we need to talk about, you know, there had been years of preparation through really spearheaded by a nonprofit organization in North Carolina called the NC Counts Coalition. Disclaimer, I am on the board, where really they did deep engagement with local trusted messengers, local organizations who were planning outreach and engagement activities. I think it's important to note that most of those outreach and engagement activities were in person, both planned by the Bureau and by these organizations. So when COVID hit, there was significant, a big pivot, right, was made. And NC Counts Coalition, for example, did a lot of interesting new engagement strategies, so yard signs, window signs, sidewalk chalking, census parades, you know, driving in decorated cars through neighborhoods, so trying to target undercounted neighborhoods. But a lot of the way that we think about helping people fill out the census would have been through in-person events where maybe you're actually helping people understand the form, possibly helping them navigate the form, providing Wi-Fi hotspots, and that was a real challenge. So right now, the way those households may be contacted is we're now in what's called the non-response follow-up period, where census workers are actually going door to door and going to be collecting information from residents that way. So that is not reported in that 60% number or so that we're tracking right now. That's collected separately, but individuals can still respond to the census through September 30th, whether online at my2020census.gov, over the phone by calling 844-330-2020, or through the paper questionnaire that they received in the mail.
We talked about door-to-door canvassing going on now. What does that look like in the COVID age, and what should people know about canvassers so that they'll, you know, be able to let them in? How long? And tell us a little bit about how long a visit takes as well.
So it should not take very long. Obviously, it'll differ depending on how complex a household is. So, you know, if you live alone and it's just you, it might only take a few minutes. If you have multiple family members, it's going to take a little bit longer. But it's important to know there are some contexts on how to identify a census employee. So they are always going to have an ID badge that includes their name, their photograph, a Department of Commerce watermark, and an expiration date. They're going to have official Census Bureau issued electronic devices and an official bag. They are not going to visit you before 9 a.m. or after 9 p.m. And they are going to be wearing PPE, and they should have been trained in appropriate social distancing protocols.
Alex, the Census Bureau has requested some extensions, time extensions because of COVID-19, both for counting and processing. What's the state of those requests?
Well, unfortunately, even the census did request an extension in April. They said, we absolutely can't finish the census in the current time frame. We need an additional month to both to go door to door and follow up with people who didn't fill out the census online. And we also need 4 more months to tabulate that information and to compile and process the data after we've collected it. Now, unfortunately, just last week, the Census Bureau backed away from that request and said they now want to complete the census in an unusually short period of time. They've just started going to door to door, and they want to conclude that process by the end of September. And it's going to pose a real problem because that's shorter than even the time that the census allocates for those activities in a normal year. And now they're facing having to conduct these processes during a public health crisis and with a large amount of attrition among their enumerators, people who go door to door. So it's unfortunate, but there are negotiations ongoing in Congress to try and restore that extension of time. The COVID relief bill passed by the Democrats in the House would restore the period of time that the census has to do a complete and accurate census. And that's really important. But we'll see where that goes. Currently, the negotiation for the next COVID relief bill has been stalled. But that would be the place where there's an opportunity to renew that census extension.
If it's not extended further and we have to meet the September deadline, can you, given the current rate of reporting, Alex, can you give us a sense of how close the state is likely to be or whether or not we can possibly hit it if we accelerate between now and then?
Well, it's hard to say because, you know, this is an unprecedented situation. So it's difficult to know to what extent the door-to-door efforts will be successful this year compared to a normal year. What we can say is that currently nationwide, the response rate is at a historic low. So it seems very unlikely that without an extension, the census will be able to reach the number of people that it usually reaches. And that will lead to inaccurate data, which would be very unfortunate for all of the reasons that we've discussed. And currently, North Carolina is behind. So North Carolina would be one of the states that is hurt more than average by an inaccurate census.
Let me stick with you for a minute, Alex, and ask, the census is collected every 10 years. How often does it coincide with presidential election years? And does that have any impact on this?
That's a good question. I don't know how often it does, although it certainly does happen. Typically, it doesn't have an impact. It's just been seen as a really important process. The census is actually required by the United States Constitution. And in past years, there has been a bipartisan effort to ensure that the census is accurate, although there have been recent years issues about adequate funding for the census. But this is really unprecedented, and it seems that in this year, the Trump administration is trying to rush the census because they see a political advantage in excluding certain communities. But we are seeing pushback in Congress, and some of that pushback has been bipartisan from members of both parties that don't want to see their states and the people they represent disadvantaged.
Rebecca, you said earlier, I think, and we have said that perhaps 1 in 4 have not yet responded. I think that was the number we used. You can correct me if I don't have that right. But I guess if I feel like, well, if I know that, then maybe we don't need to count. But that's a kind of a facetious way of asking a more serious question, which is, do we make estimates at the end of all this and try to estimate how many people might not have been counted?
Yeah, so I think it's an important point of clarification. So when we're talking about self-response rate, we are talking about the percentage of known addresses in the census's mail universe that have responded. So we shorthand that to households, and then, you know, the state demographer's office or I might make estimates on how many people that represents. But we actually know the percentage of addresses that have responded, and that's about 59%. Mm-hmm. But the Bureau has other groups that are counted through different efforts. So there's like an enumeration of homeless and service-based enumeration where you go out to count maybe unhoused residents of the state. There's group quarters enumeration for military barracks, college dormitories, nursing homes, jails, and prisons. So those are all processes that are ongoing now and have been disrupted or modified in some way. But the self-response is the most accurate and cost-effective way we have of completing the data. The next most accurate is going to be the non-response follow-up, where we're actually going door-to-door. But keep in mind that the Bureau does use proxy respondents. So if you don't respond, they might ask your neighbor, which I can tell you, I'm much more accurate about my own house than I am about the house across the street. And then after that, what's going to happen is, and what we are particularly concerned about right now, is that with less time to do door-to-door follow-up, we may see more housing units that need to be estimated through statistical methods, like what's called imputation. So historically, that number has been very small, less than 1% of all households. But I've seen estimates coming out from other researchers that suggest that in some communities, that may be 10 to 12% or even more of housing units in this census.
I'm going to break right now and correct myself. 4 in 10 right now is the under-response count in the state of North Carolina. 4 in 10 under-response. That's the correct number. And I thank you very much, Rebecca Tippett, founding director of Carolina Demography, Carolina Population Center, and Alex Dasanovich, director of Campaign Finance and Electoral Reform at the liberal think tank, the Center for American Progress. Thank you, and there's more of the State of Things just ahead. Stay tuned.